Network, proudly presents the Jay Slade Show. With your host, CyberGolf.com's own Jay Clemmer, and co-starring a galaxy of the golf and sports world's greatest names as special guests. Yo, 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 this is your main man, DJ Q, telling you to put your hands together for your friend and mine, Jay Clemmer.
All right, thank you, DJ Q, for that wonderful introduction, as always. So glad to have the best in the business working on the Jay's Play Show on the Golf News Net Radio Network. And I am Jay Flummer of the Golf News Net. Hey, everybody, welcome to this post-PGA Championship edition of Jay's Plays. Jay's Plays is brought to you by Swifties, All-American pubs all across I-90 and I-87 in New York. For a great hamburger, for a great drink, and for some beautiful ladies, it's Swifties. And by Spring 44 Vodka, it's the freshest, crispest, cleanest vodka because of the Colorado spring water. Spring 44, spring for some today. We got a fantastic show lined up for you, everybody. We are going to sum up Jason Day's fantastic performance, Whistling Straits at the PGA Championship. And on that note, we're going to be bringing in our producer, Ryan Balanchy, and as our very special guest today, one of the true greats, one of my very favorite people in the whole wide world, and a man who's been a seminal, quintessential sports writer, not just for golf, but for so many different sporting events all across the world. It's Art Spander, formerly the Oakland Tribune and the San Francisco Examiner. Now he writes for Real Clear Sports, the New York Daily News, and a number of other publications. Ryan and Art, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's really fantastic to have you on here, Art. You know, thanks so much for coming. One of my very favorite memories is covering the Olympic Club U.S. Open with you back in 2012, even though I didn't get a chance to come to the party you threw when you were the hometown boy. And one of my favorite stories about that is that we both ended up missing the no-hitter, the first one in Giants history.
Well, it wasn't the first one. It was a perfect game by Matt Cain. But Tim Lincecum had pitched a no-hitter the year before. I think there were four straight years in which a Giant pitched a no-hitter. Lincecum and Cain and somebody else, but Cain pitched a perfect game, and it was a night also happened to be my wife and I, our anniversary party, and usually I have the TV on here, and I didn't turn it on, and everybody said, you know what, we missed that night, a perfect game. I said, so did I. Anyway.
Well, we all kind of did. I was taking a jog. You know, one of the reasons why I couldn't come to your party was I was so swamped. I was the only one there from CyberGolf that time. And I had to go out for my therapeutic run in between, the day's play. And I happened to be staying right near the park. And I'm running past the park, and there's guys with $5 tickets in their hands. And Sal Johnson calls me up. Hey, I'm inside the baseball diamond. And I said to him, oh, you know, I'm running right back. You got to fight on a ticket. He said, no, I'm meeting Ed Patterman. We're going to be discussing business. I said, all right, I'll catch you another time. So what does he do? He calls me in the ninth inning. Sorry, I talked you out of a no-hitter. Thanks a lot, Sal. But we did get a perfect game, actually, I should say. But we did get pretty much as close to a perfect game in golf as we could have gotten. Jason Day setting a major championship record in score to par, 20 under, absolutely tearing limb from limb, Whistling Straits, a supposedly difficult golf course. Art and Ryan, please put this in historical perspective for us.
Who do you want to go first? You want me to go?
Well, you seem ready. Go right ahead.
I defer to Art.
Okay. I mean, obviously, the lowest score ever in a major. The guys are tremendous. My friend Karen Krause and Doug Ferguson both wrote pieces about the depth of golf has never been better. I mean, in the old days, you had a Nicklaus, you had a Palmer, and even when Tiger started out, there weren't as many. Now you have maybe 20 people who can score like crazy, win majors, and Spieth, Jordan Spieth, and now Jason Day, and of course Zach Johnson, just a notch above the rest of them. I thought it was very interesting. Justin Rose was something like, what, a combined 34 under par in the four majors and didn't win any of them. That's how good these golfers are. And yet, Day was a great story, not only the way he scored, but the fact that he had come so close to winning at the Masters, at the U.S. Open, and he was even saying if he had blown this one, lost it, it would have been traumatic. He didn't lose it. And so you have a guy who had done everything but win a major, and now he's won a major.
How about you, Ryan? There was some great stuff there by what more can you add for us?
I think you still have to take in perspective what Jordan Spieth accomplished this year, and he did have a very measured view of it after the fact that he was a Dustin Johnson eagle putt made away from just winning one major this year. But what Art said about how incredible Justin Rose was in the majors this year, Spieth was 20 shots better. That's unbelievable. Spieth was 20 shots better in the majors. He was 19 better than Jason Day, and Jason Day was a factor in three of the four majors with a 54-hole lead or a share thereof. That just goes to tell you how amazing his season was, and I think it also tells you how good of golf Jason Day had to play to put that guy away and do it convincingly. And I think that was one of the best compliments Spieth could have paid Day to say after the fact in the scoring tent, and to reiterate it later, there was nothing he could have done on Sunday in that group to have stopped Jason Day. And that's what you want to hear as an athlete. That's what you want to hear as a competitor, that you were so good that even your next best competitor's best could have done nothing to stop you.
You know, Jordan did say some very interesting things and some very graceful things in that interview. My favorite on that note was on the 11th hole. Someone asked him if he knew there was a turning point, if he knew there was a moment where he just wasn't going to catch Jason. He said it was on 11. He said when he saw how far Jason hit his tee shot, so incredibly much further than his own, that he actually said, "Holy bleep." And I looked at Jason, you know, shaking his head, you know, "Are you kidding me?" And Jason just flexed his bicep at him. And Jordan said he knew he'd be playing uphill from then. So the other thing that I found absolutely shocking, okay, Justin Rose said that he thought the winning score was going to be 14 under, and that's exactly what Justin Rose shot. And yet he was still six shots clear. They dismembered what was supposed to be a nigh-unconquerable Pete Dye golf course. This is supposed to be a hard golf course. Talk to us a little bit about how these players were able to just, you know, tune this golf course up like a race car and take it out for a drive, with such control.
Well, you know, the first thing, the PGA, I think you both know the philosophy of the four majors. The Masters is putting, the tough greens. The U.S. Open, narrow fairways, keep it down the middle. The British Open is the weather, and boy, did we have it this year. And then the PGA is like, okay, we'll put a little bit of everything in there. We can't promise the weather, although we had an awful day, 40-mile-an-hour winds on Friday. But they don't want you. The U.S. Open likes you around par. The PGA doesn't care where you are, and they also always have club pros. They don't want to embarrass them, although they had one made the cut this year. But go out and score, and let's see what you can do, guys. And you saw what they could do, and it's great. And the PGA, you know, they say this is major. This is their slogan, as if they're trying to get a niche there, because the other three come at the proper time. The Masters is the beginning. The Open is America's championship. The British Open is the oldest tournament. And then, unfortunately, you might say, the PGA comes when the pro football camps are opening. And
a bit of a denouement in a way, isn't it?
A little slower, a little smaller, and people aren't quite as focused. So this was major, and it was great that one, Jason Day, who had been there before, finally breaks through. Jordan Spieth shows what a great year, and of course, we can debate the coulda, shouldas. Four shots more, and he's in the Grand Slam. But the great thing about golf, And the awful thing about golf is there's no defense. You go out and play your game. You have no control over anybody else. And as you said, Jay, about Jordan after Jason hit that great tee shot, you know, what are you going to do? Except he swore a little bit.
Ryan, your observation, same question.
You know, I think the kind of split the year into halves with majors, and Art highlighted it really well with the first two of the putting contest for the Masters, more or less a ball striking wall at the U.S. Open. But the final two majors kind of leave it up to the field, or to the weather, or to both. And I think that they do that because they really need to leave it up to the players. They don't want to be the story. And in the PGA Championship's case, going last, it is somewhat at the mercy of the three majors before it, because if you get three duds going into it, or two duds, then the fourth major either has an opportunity to steal the show and be the best of them all, or is kind of proven, not meaningless, but without the same amount of public attraction. In this case, the first three majors of the year were fantastic, and it's turned out to be just as great as the fourth major of four this year. And it really was a great compliment to the season. And I know that 20 under par in a major championship is maybe a little bit of overkill, but I think that's part of a bigger meta discussion of what is par? What does par matter? In the end, if we had made the par 70 and taken two strokes off of Jason Day every day, would we have been less impressed if he came in at 12 under par as opposed to 20? I don't think so. I think we all would have been all in the 382-yard drive that led to a flip wedge for an eagle try on a par 5, regardless of what you thought of the overall par of the golf course. But as you mentioned your piece for us, Jay, that if you could overpower what Pete Dye throws out at you, then you pretty much have an opportunity to score at will. And that's what the guys mostly at the top of the board did. And they hit driver, and they hit it fearlessly, and they put it in the fairway, and they put themselves in position on a very fair setup, not designed to punish, but to reward good play. And the good play was also subsequently rewarded on the greens with pure surfaces that rolled perfectly, that were basically no player complaints all week about the setup or the course. And when you get conditions like that, things like this are bound to happen.
Now, something interesting that I've noticed about Pete Dye golf courses, you know, they're supposed to be frightening. He's supposed to be this cross between Bela Lugosi and a mad scientist, and his courses look fearsome. But the pros have been tearing them up. Five major championships have been held at Pete Dye golf courses, all PGAs. And in four of them, double digits under par have won. And on the other one, it was DJ Singh with 8 under. But he started the day at 12 under and just had a lousy day in the wind. He fired a 76, one of the highest scores by a winner ever to close a major. And more than that, even though these scores are very high, there's something else I've noticed, Ryan and Art, which is this. Everyone, with the exception so far of Jason, who has won a major championship at a Pete Dye golf course, is a multiple major winner. They either won another one after they won the first one there, or they had already won one before they got to that Pete Dye golf course and won again. For example, Daly won at Crooked Stick, and what did he do? Bomb the driver over everything. And then he won again in 95 at the Open Championship. Then you have Martin Keimer in 2010. He won at Whistling Straits and then won the U.S. Open in historic record fashion. You got VJ when he won at Whistling Straits. It was his third major. And Rory won his second major at Kiawah Island, again with a record score, this time a record in how many strokes he won by, margin of victory. And then, as you know, he's won four majors. So is there something about Pete Dye golf courses that, you know, doesn't faze these guys and that they're able to destroy them? And is there something about it that brings out excellent players? Art, what do you make of this?
Well, I mean, these guys know Pete Dye golf courses. They play the Players' Championship, and that's historic. The 17th green there becomes the talking point. The way I've always looked at golf tournaments, including the ones we've just played, even a regular tournament, is who's up on the leaderboard? When people say, oh, that's a bad winner, or there's something wrong with the golf course, not if you have Jordan Spieth and Jason Day and Justin Rose and really great golfers. You know, we had Justin, of course, people forget a little bit, not the journalist, that he won the Open only a couple of years ago. And when you have a leaderboard full of great golfers, there's nothing wrong with the course. And as Ryan mentioned, it doesn't matter if you're 10 under or 10 over. And that was the old argument. You can make a course as hard as you want or as easy as you want. And these days, with people hitting 300-yard tee shots and wedges into the green on what used to be almost a par 5 hole, 480-yard, 490-yard, 500-yard holes, It doesn't matter. And then, of course, the argument is the game, the way the game's played, is it too big for the courses? But it isn't if the right guys are up there. And certainly the last few years, it's hard to disagree. You know, as you mentioned, Keimer won a second, and he ran away with the U.S. Open on an historic course. And I have no problem when I see a leaderboard and Dustin Johnson throw him up there. He hasn't won yet, and of course he's getting notorious for great first rounds and good finishes. But he's a fine golfer, and maybe he's going to close one day. But his name's up there: Justin Rose, Jordan Spieth, all these other guys. And of course, Jason Day now is the champion. I have absolutely no trouble if it's 20 over or 20 under par.
Brian, your thoughts on that?
You know, I'm kind of torn because I part of me wants to see these guys play every shot in the bag. And when you're hitting the drive 330, 340, 350, 380, 409, whatever number you want it to be, that is not possible. These guys didn't really have to entertain the idea of getting mid to long irons in a lot of holes, at least the guys that were at the top of the board. And I think that takes some portion of skill out of the game. Now, it replaces it with another developing power, and you can have the discussion about what you want to see. But I think Art is right that if the golf course identifies the best players, then it's not out of date. It's not irrelevant. And it's routinely done that. I mean, to have the three best players playing golf right now at the top of the board, and you had McIlroy finish respectively in his return back from a soccer injury, I think that validates the golf course. I think that tells you that it's a good course, regardless of whether it's overpowered, regardless of whether the score is 20 under par that wins, or whatever par is. So I think this design is validated by who plays it the best. And if it's a fluke winner, then it's a fluke design. And if it's a series of great challengers and a wonderful winner, then it is a very good golf course. And I think that's why the PGA of America loves this venue. I think that's why it'll make a wonderful host for the 2020 Ryder Cup. And that's why we'll see it again in 2025, if not sooner, for the PGA Championship.
It will be a terrific match play venue, that's for certain, with so many half-par holes and so many chances for swings, especially with some of these guys able to bomb the ball over trouble. You know, it was no less a person than Tiger Woods himself who said, look, peak guy golf courses look scary, but if you can, you know, keep your driver straight and bomb it over all the trouble, you're going to have short irons in and you're going to get a lot of looks. So I think that you mentioned, Art, correctly, that they are familiar with Dye's work. And these guys are hitting it so long that they don't have to think as much about the angles of attack that we amateur golfers have to. You know, we have to be far more cerebral, I think, you know, tacking our way around the golf course, you know, rather than just getting up there and bombing a drive. Now, speaking of Woods, you know, two questions I want to throw out to both of you, one of them being, the same question that I asked Woods in the press conference, you know, has he lost step? And then I'd like to bring up the question that Rich Lerner asked on Golf Channel, is the Tiger era over? I have to answer both in the affirmative. Art and Ryan, your thoughts?
Well, it certainly appears at this moment that Tiger Woods is not the golfer he used to be and maybe never will be again. But I've also found, and you find in other sports too, unless the difference with golf and maybe even tennis, and they're the two individual sports, and then football and baseball and basketball, is that the coach cuts you, or they waive you, or you, they say you can't make the rotation anymore, you can't do it, or you can get hurt. But in golf, you can just go out and play. And if you're great, I don't think you ever lose greatness. Jack Nicklaus, now it hasn't been quite this bad, but Nicklaus in a mini slump, you might say, not very long ago, you know, when he played in the late 60s, early 70s, if I got my years right, he went five, six majors without a win, and people are saying, what's the matter with Jack? And then he comes back and he wins at St. Andrews in 1970 and throws his putter in the air. Look, nobody plays well all the time. As you get older, you know, you don't play as well as you did when you were younger. Jeff Rude asked me like 2 or 3 years ago, and I'm not purporting to be an expert, but I've seen, I think it was my 161st major, and I listen to people, and you hear people talk. But he said, have you ever seen a golfer who became a better putter as he got older than he was when he was younger? And I had to answer, no. Your body, you know, Arnie, and this is a little digression, but Arnie was asked once, Arnold Palmer, what are the yips? And he says, it isn't just in your head, it's your wrist, too. After you grip a putter 10,000, 20,000 times, your wrists aren't quite the same. So nobody's going to be the same at age 38 or 39 as he was at 25 or 30. Now, did Nicklaus win the Masters at 46? Yeah. Was that a freak in a way? Gary Player and Jack Nicklaus are the only two guys won over a long period of time. And I don't want to give up on Tiger yet, but it looks like he's slumping and it may not get back.
My thought is that golf is cyclical and that, you know, you see guys get hot for a period of 18 months to 2 years. Rory said in his interview, well, you know, eras only last 6 months. He was close. You know, Rich Beam, 2 years. David Toms, 2 years. You know, Darren Clark, 2 years. Guys come up for a little while, then they go back down, and then maybe they cycle back in again. Chris DeMarco, 2 years. You know, but the true greats do two things. One, they keep coming back, and two, they can win on all four surfaces or all four types of golf courses that the various majors have played. And one thing that bodes well for Day, just like it bodes well for Webb Simpson, just like it bodes well now for definitely for Zach Johnson, and bodes well for so many Spieth, is that they can play well in all four majors. And that's what separates a true great from a merely pretty good. Ryan, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Woods era is over. Frankly, I think we could go back and assess a time of death much sooner than we already have. And the guy hasn't won a major since 2008. It's been 7-plus years at this point. And I think that really, if you look back on it, and Ian O'Connor did a wonderful piece on this for ESPN, the week of the championship. So if you look back at it, and I've tried to make this case for years now, and when Wang Yang beat Tiger Woods at Hazeltine National, it was over. We just didn't know it. And I think we gave it one more look, maybe it's the 2010 U.S. Open, where we thought Tiger had a chance, albeit it was from behind, not with a share of the 54-hole lead, as he's won all those majors with that edge. But I think we all thought, okay, here he is in condition again. This would be incredible. It would be a 15th major. Who knows where it goes from here? And it didn't manifest itself. And I think what came out of losing to Yang led a lot of things, personally and professionally, to this point. And, you know, at that point in his career, 39 going on 40 in a few months' time, without much to show for this season or the last one for that matter, going on changes that he doesn't feel entirely comfortable with, forced to humble himself to go play the Wyndham Championship for the first time in his career, and that's not to take anything away from the Wyndham. It's just a statement of fact. I mean, the guy hasn't played there in 20 years and suddenly decides to. And I think that tells you a little something about where Tiger's at mentally. Does that mean he can't win a spare major here and there? No, that doesn't mean that at all. But the research tells you, if you look at when guys lose their edge over time, it's about 36 among the greatest players of all time. And you get the freak majors, you get the freak season. Arnold Palmer had a great season at 40. But Tom Watson pretty much went away at 34, and that was it. Phil had a good season at 40. Jack had a good season at 40. But they weren't great seasons consistently through the years past the late, you know, mid to late 30s. So I think that's kind of your sell-by date on most players, unless you get one freak year in there, and then that's kind of all she wrote. And maybe there's one left for Tiger, but right now it doesn't look like there's one.
Well, Dan Jenkins wrote a great book called Slim and None, where he says your chances of winning a major after the age of 44 are slim and none. Now, you mentioned the Wei Yang loss at Hazeltine, which came in August of 2009. I wonder if that might more have been an effect rather than a cause, because, you know, what I think was the reason for Tiger's, well, fall, but, you know, as a player, also was his fall from grace in the scandal. But what people sometimes forget is that that wall had started to crumble before Thanksgiving. You know, we hear the stories about how he and Elin were having fights at the Open Championship in Turnberry. You know, Tiger missing the cut, playing very poorly. And I'm wondering if perhaps the loss to Yang was more an effect of, you know, having personal problems rather than a cause, and that was the end of his playing golf, because I still have to look at the watershed moment as being Thanksgiving of 09, you know, rather than the loss to Yen. Your thoughts on that, Art and Ryan? How much of this is in Tiger's head? How much is in Tiger's head?
Yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, first place, was we know, until he lost to Yang, he had won every time in a major when he had the lead. Sooner or later, you're not going to do that. I mean, nobody's perfect. Rocky Marciano finished undefeated. No, nobody else does. And so the longer you play, the greater your chances of losing if you're undefeated. And I think Jaime Diaz from Golf Digest, who started writing about Tiger when Tiger was like 13, 12, maybe before that, he and I were talking at Whistling Straits, and he thinks that the scandal, the women, the announcement, as you mentioned, not coming very long after the Yang, the defeat by Yang, had a tremendous effect and still does. I mean, you put all this together. As people age, their priorities change. You have a family. You don't have a family, or they're very young at age 25. When you're 40, your kids are growing up, and now, of course, Tiger is in charge of his kids, and he's the sole parent, and that's one thing. You're thinking about other items besides how long is the putt, et cetera, et cetera. And then, two, your body changes. You've heard this from a lot of people. He's 39, but he's an old 39. He's had four surgeries on his left knee. He's had surgery in his back. My puppy is arguing here. And so,
it makes for good ambiance.
And so she disagrees. Anyway, I didn't. Only 2 years. Let's go the opposite direction. Only 2 years ago, 2013, Tiger won 5 tournaments. So how bad? Just hasn't won any majors since 08. And maybe the worst thing, and Ryan agrees or disagrees, is that every time it gets close, or did get close in 12, 13, 14, he fell apart in the last round or the last 2 days, which was very un-Tiger-like when he was younger.
All right, well, one last fast question before we go to break, and then we'll come back with a few more questions for Ryan Ballantyne and especially for Art Spander, who we're speaking with, former writer for the Oakland Tribune and the San Francisco Examiner, now with Real Clear Sports, now with the New York Daily News, a Lifetime Achievement Award winner from the PGA of America. Give us one or two players to watch going forward into next year that we have not yet discussed. Who's the next great thing?
That's a good question. I mean, just look at the leaderboard. That's what I tell people. I don't think there's anybody. I mean, did we think Jordan Spieth was going to be great? Yes, we did. He was a low amateur in the U.S. Open at Olympic Club. And that should have been an indication. And everybody was saying, this guy is going to be good. And why should he left school 3 years ago at Texas, and he's done nothing but prove leaving school was correct, the way Tiger did. I just say, look at all the guys who are in the top 20, 30 of finishers. Those are your groups. You know, the Ricky Fowlers, he's been the Jason Day. He did everything first but won a tournament in America, and then he wins the Players, and then the question is, he's going to win a major? Is Dustin Johnson going to win a major? He's one of the great players there. And he's, sooner or later, one of those putts is going to fall for Dustin Johnson, I think. So the depth, as we've all discussed, the depth is so tremendous. I don't think anybody is going to take the game apart. And that was a great quote by Rory about eras used to last 20 years or 2 years or five, whatever it was, and now they last 6 months. Well, part of it's his fault, and part of it's the other guy's fault. A year ago, he was dominating golf, and this year, just Jordan Spieth is dominating golf. And who dominates golf next year? And once again, I get back to the golf and bowling are the two sports in which you have no control over your opponent or anybody else. And of course, as you know, we're also familiar, you might tee off at 8 o'clock in the morning and some other guy goes off at 2:30 in the afternoon and shoots 63 and you're already off the course. You have no control over that. And that's part of the game.
All right, everybody, we'll be back in just a couple more minutes with Ryan Ballengee of the Golf News Network and with Art Spanner. I'm Jay Flemmer of the Golf News Network, and you're listening to Jay's Plays. DJQ, take us away for just a minute.
That bump music means we're going to have to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be back at the second half of the show in just a minute.
This is your main man, DJQ, and you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Network Radio Network.